Recording. Hey, everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. This is our 44th, count them, 44, Zoom call on grassroots emergency election protection. We are on PRN-FM at my radio slot, the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. Glad to have everybody with us. This is a phenomenal group. As we all know, there's 55 of us are right now on the call. We are going to cover a wide range. We have some of topics. We have some really important people with us. Well, we're all important, we have a syndicated columnist, Bob Kohler, who's with us, an old buddy, a great, great writer. And Bob, I hope you'll post your latest piece in the chat. Emily Levy is going to talk about her recent Zoom call. We have Bert with us. Bert is going to be introduced by Joel, and also Ray McClendon is with us. So we're going to go very, very deep in the weeds. Want to welcome James Fukuda from New York, the next governor. James, good to see you. And we're moving ahead on all fronts here. So I want to say that when we first started doing election protection back in 2000 in Florida and 2004 in Ohio, nobody would pay attention to us. And we were marginalized. We've been working all these years. And I got to say that today, the election protection issue is on the front page of the New York Times, and it is the lead story on CNN. And thank God we've been working all these years to get people to pay attention to voter suppression, because God help us if all these bills that are being proposed, and we're going to talk about them, get through. So we can be grateful for the tremendous accomplishments of the grassroots election protection movement, and we're going to continue to forward its work. So I want to talk very quickly with Emily Levy, then I'm going to introduce Bob Kohler, and we'll proceed from there. Emily, tell us please about the Zoom call you just had.
So the Zoom call we just had was one piece of a bigger organizing project that we're doing. And I think you're asking about that call because you were there for part of it. So yes. What you and I discussed on email that I would say is a little different from that. So I'm going to go ahead with what I planned, which will include that. So scrutineers.org is an organization that I founded in January of last year after 16 years working in this field to try to fill some of the gaps that I saw in this movement. One of the big ones that it's there for is to help people who are fairly new to the issue really get up to speed on understanding the background, the things about the different voting systems and how they work and what the problems are with them, so that you can volunteer with whatever organization you want to volunteer with. So we do a lot of training, and then we help connect people with each other and make sure folks are aware of the calls to action that are happening from different organizations so that they can participate. So we're an online community. It looks kind of like a social media site in our site where you can make posts and people can respond to them and that sort of thing. It's a nonpartisan organization. Anyone can join. We do charge a $1.99 one-time fee to join to keep bots out of the site. And if that's a problem, you can contact me through the link on the homepage and we'll find a way for you to get in without paying that $1.99. So one of the things that we are working on right now is getting some amendments to the For the People Act. And that's what the meeting was about that Harvey was asking about. As some of you may know, it's very strong on voting rights and is not strong on election security. And there are we've kind of narrowed it down to the few things we think are the absolute most important things to have changed in the election security front. We're working with NVRTF, the National Voting Rights Task Force. We have a statement we've put out asking for the amendments we want. Today is the last day to endorse it. I will put the link into the chat, but if you are listening on the radio and can't see the chat, you can go to nvrtf.org, National Voting Rights Task Force. We're asking organizations to sign on and also leaders who have an affiliation that they can put with it to sign on to that statement, which you can read at the link. So I welcome all of you to come over. If you have questions, you can ask me in the chat or contact me through our homepage at scrutineers.org.
Great. Thank you so much, Emily. We're honored to have you with us. And we have set up a calendar through the Election Protection 2024.org site. Anyone who's putting on a Zoom call, go to the calendar and put in the date and the link and the time. And we encourage people who are doing independent Zoom calls to make use of the site. I want to mention real quick, my buddy Dennis Bernstein has jumped on the call. Dennis, are you with us? There you are. Dennis Bernstein is the host of the Flashpoints show, a tremendous news show on KPFA every weekday in Berkeley and in the Bay Area. He's been a tremendous supporter of the voter rights groups and a tremendous resource. Dennis, do you want to just say hi?
Hi, everybody. I'm just going to listen in, put my ear to the ground and learn something.
Okay. And you in the Bay Area, and your show is syndicated on Pacifica. Yeah. Is that right?
It's on about 60 stations across the country.
And it's called Flashpoints. It goes at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And look if in your local Pacifica directory.
It's also a podcast, Harv. Many places to find it as a podcast as well. Just Google
okay.
it.
Okay. And if you want to put a link in the chat, please do, Dennis. But Dennis is as good as it gets, folks. So the show is Flashpoints, and we're glad to have him on. We're also glad to have Bob Kohler with us. Bob, do you want to say a couple words? Bob has just put out a terrific piece on voter suppression, on what we do. He's been, he's a very young guy, but he's been writing for a long time. Bob, do you want to say hi to us? And if you can post the link to your latest piece in the chat, that would be great. I'm trying to unmute you here. Robert Kohler, there you go. Okay, Bob?
Yes. Okay. Hi. Yes. Okay. Hello to everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. What a great group here. And I have tried to post the link to the column, and I have not succeeded yet.
All right, we'll get it up. We'll get it up before the end.
Yeah. Okay. But all right. But yeah, the column is called, you know, Jim Crow voter suppression, Jim Crow revisited, and it's a number of places on the internet.
Well, we've actually Steve Caruso just put up a link. It's actually at freepress.org. So anybody who wants to take a look, it's a great piece. It's one of the important pieces, and we're going to connect you with Howie Hawkins and Joel Siegel and others. So, and Bob, you're syndicated by who? Who syndicates you now?
I am syndicated, surprisingly enough, by the Chicago Tribune. It's now called Tribune Content Agency. I was an editor there for many years, and as an editor, I was able to find my way kind of across the aisle into syndication, this column has been, I've been writing this particular column for about 22 years now. It's
great.
Kind of amazing how time flies. And
yes, and your piece today is really good and really covers the territory. So anybody look in the chat and understand that piece is probably going to be read by millions of people all over the country because it is nationally syndicated. And Bob, we're really glad to have you on.
Thank you. I'll just mention, my website is commonwonders.com. So that's you can check out that, and I'll make sure I get the link up eventually.
Okay, good. Thank you so much, Bob. Great to have you on. I also want to acknowledge Lulu Freestad. Lulu runs a regular Zoom. She's one of our great election protection advocates. And Lulu, do you want to real quickly tell people about your Zoom, and then I'm going to go to John Brakey.
Yeah, thanks so much, Harvey. It's great to be here, and thanks for bringing everybody together. We're not on Zoom, actually. The forums that we have are on YouTube and Facebook. They're every other Tuesday night, And we have been focusing on HR1, the bill that Emily mentioned, which is a really critical election reform bill, HR1 and S1 now in the Senate. So I'll put into the chat the last two links that we had where we had experts from around the country, including the Pulitzer Prize finalist, Dr. Alex Kasar, who talked about some of the issues that Howie Hawkins brought up previously, the limitations of the campaign finance reform section, and especially how it might impact third-party candidates, the importance of third parties in our entire history, how influential they've been. And then there was also a guest who talked about racial equity and how the bill actually can really positively impact people of color and the opportunities that they have to vote, which have been really suppressed, as we all know. So I'll put those links for the last shows that we've had. And then similar to Scrutineers, Smart Elections has also put together recommendations for changes in the bill, and you can sign on to those also. And I will say we have a really cool forum coming up on Tuesday, March 23rd. The author of one of my favorite books, Deliver the Vote.
Okay.
That is a book that is a history of election fraud in the United States from its inception. It is one of the best documented books ever. Again, Tracy Campbell is a Pulitzer Prize nominee, and he's going to be a guest on March 23rd. I highly encourage you to come. We're going to be talking about the history of documented election fraud, as well as the reform movements that succeeded and how did they succeed. So that's going to be on Tuesday, March 23rd at 7 p.m. And I'll put all of this information in the chat. And it's so kind of you, Harvey, to give us a chance to let people
absolutely
know about it.
Absolutely. Well, you're why we're here. So if you'll put it in the calendar as well, we'll have it in both places.
I will. And Steve Crusoe has been helpful in getting that set up. Thanks so much to Steve. We really appreciate that.
Okay, great. Now we have with us, thank you so much, Lulu and Emily. We have two really powerful figures, icons in the election protection movement with us today. Ray McClendon, who's going to report to us from Georgia, and then Bert Wittes of Joel Siegel will introduce him. He's a really heavy hitter in this. I do want to make sure we cover another of our heavy hitters, John Brakey in Arizona. What's going on in Arizona is one of those things you couldn't make up. I mean, I often tell people, if I was to write a political novel and have Donald Trump as the main character, nobody would believe it. And if you were to make up what's going on in Arizona, no one would believe that either. So John, can you give us, and it's very obviously very important, Arizona's the key swing state with two senators. So John, will you tell us what's going on, maybe a few minutes, tell us what's going on in Arizona?
Well, you know, you did a pretty good job describing what's going on. You know, no doubt the eyes of experts, everybody across the country is into elections, is watching Arizona. The Senate won the case. They are going to get all the information. They know they have to move very carefully, and they are negotiating with different people across the country and doing interview to properly go after this stuff carefully. And while they're doing that, we at Audit USA has filed a lawsuit against the Board of Supervisors because this, at least the images are now going to be with the Senate, but we're looking to get the images to the people and prove that ballot images are a public record in the state of Arizona. And so our emphasis in the suit that we just filed is to free up the images and then point out that the images and the ballots and those boxes are protected because there's 1400 boxes and there's a library set. So the first thing that they need to do is to go after the ballot images first, then they can do other testing, but let us be able to map out how this thing should process as well as making images real. And I think it's the biggest thing that we're all trying to combat is cynicism in elections. I believe everything's going to add up right in Arizona. And it's very important that more than now than ever that we prove to the losers that they've really lost and to their satisfaction.
So, John, you're saying that the Senate, the Arizona Senate has gotten possession of all the ballots from the presidential election in Arizona? Is that what's happened?
That they have got control over it all, even though it has not left. The most, the best place to keep it is right where it is, inside Maricopa, in a special room. Those boxes shouldn't be moved. Keep them right there until they got something set up. That is the plan.
It's unbelievable. So the physical ballots from the Arizona election of November 2020 are now in the possession of the Arizona Senate?
They are responsible as well as Maricopa, but they have not moved them because they haven't got a plan put together how they want to process. And they really want to use the election department. So all of this is up in the air and being handled and by the Senate with other folks deciding how this process is going to work. Let's put it this way. It's a real complicated mess because on top of this, if they don't wind up doing it right, then it could just escalate the problem even worse than it is.
Well, I know where they should take the ballots. They should take the ballots to Yucca Mountain. Sorry. That's a cross.
I'm going to keep them right where they are right now. They're very secure. They're under camera. The boxes shouldn't be moved. I'm a real stickler for keeping them safe and then work with the forensic evidence to prove that there was a problem or if not. And then even after that, do further testing. And I just want to say Ray Lutz is right in the middle of all of this. He could become a major player. He's one of two companies that they're interviewing to run the images, which is really so kind of
presumption. The presumption is that the Arizona Senate is going to have somebody go in and hand count all the ballots to make sure that the election was done right. Is that what they're saying?
No, they really want to examine it because let's face it, there's a lot of crazy theories out here. Some are the ballots came in from China. Some came in, they were stuffed. There's all sorts of, and all of this needs to be disproved in an ordinary fashion. And some of this stuff can be done by scanning. Some will take hand counts. Look at what Rick Hessen just put up. 71% of the people in this country think that violence is coming in the upcoming years because of elections. You know, we need to make sure that we can make elections in this country transparent, trackable, and publicly verified. That's the mission we are doing. We also got news out of Florida. We're proceeding with our case there, and I'll post that press release in the chat box with the press release, what's going on in Arizona. But it is fascinating. And thank you, Harvey, for, you know, putting this show together and bringing us all together, you know, every week and, understanding what's happening across the country, because there's no doubt that there's a media blackout going. The only thing they want to do is attack people and call you all crazies if you think something's wrong in the mainstream media. We need to prove to people if elections are real. It's time. How are we going to stop violence? It's transparency as a solution.
Okay, thank you. Ruth Strauss has a hand.
Yeah, hi. I just want to thank you so much. That's outrageous, fascinating, awful. What do you want any of us to do if there is anything for us to do?
Well, I would say is that share what we're doing with the media. Be the media, because it's not happening with the mainstream. It's incredible the cases that are going on that are gaining some headway to be able to resolve this issue and bring us together to act like Americans. Because, you know, that's what I'm doing. I'm right in the heart of the Republican Party, and I tell them that I'm a proud progressive Democrat who's here as an American, because we need to believe in a ballot box. Like it was, to some people, it's a religion. And so, when you lose your religion, things can get bad. So it's getting informed.
Okay.
All so right. Are you saying that we should go to our local newspapers? What are you exactly saying?
What I'm saying is elections are not any good unless they're transparent, trackable, and publicly verified. And you should look in your backyard to see how they prove elections.
We know that.
Okay. John, will you post places that we can link to your work? Post your website and your links. And
I will do that and other stuff. And you bet.
All right, great. Very quickly, Jeffrey Barkdale, and then we're going to go to Ray McClendon. Jeffrey, what you got real quick?
John, you mentioned something about violence. Is that correct?
Yeah. Go ahead.
CNN. It's I got it in fact on my screen right now. Okay.
American sink election results could lead to political violence in the coming years. Well, let's
like what happened on January 6th in Washington, D.C.
Yes. Right.
We predicted so that.
Our job is a couple years ago. Our job is to build elections that people can have faith in, and so that violence doesn't come. Okay, thank you, Jeffrey. I want to go now to Ray McClendon. Ray, if you're ready, we'd like a report from what's going on in Atlanta and also with the national NAACP in terms of, you know, this giant wave of election suppression that's come at us, voter suppression. And then we're going to go to Joel Siegel, who is going to introduce Bert Wittes. So, Ray, what's happening there?
Okay. Hey, thanks, Harvey. Always a pleasure to be on this call and this great movement, which has been a major part of the whole wave of what helped us get Georgia in the right column in both December, in November and in January. And as a direct response to the outcome in specifically in January, first in November and then in January, we, as you all know, we've had a wave of voter suppression bills that have come up in Georgia. Georgia right now is the tip of the spear. We have seen the bills that have come forth in Georgia are being replicated in other states. As many of you know, there's over almost 45 states now that have some form of voter suppression, over 250 plus bills. And some of the most onerous ones are in Georgia, most specifically two omnibus bills, House Bill 541 and 531 and 240 SB 241 in the Senate. We've gone through what these bills will do in the past, but suffice it to say they directly target suppressing votes of Black and Brown people. And so there's been an outpouring of support from the same coalition that we brought together in order to get out the vote. In the recent elections, we have re-galvanized ourselves to go out in the streets and protest. We've been having daily protests at the state Capitol building during the General Assembly session. And a little over a week ago, we got involved to bring the corporate sector in. Most of the major corporations in Georgia, either those national headquarter corporations or major regional headquarters of Fortune 500 companies, are big contributors to many of the sponsors of these bills. And so we've directly targeted over the last week through our collaboration, the Deltas, the Home Depots, Aflac, all of the major banks that have regional headquarters in Georgia, AT&T and others. And what we're saying to them is that many of your loyal customers are upset with the potential impact to have their votes disenfranchised, and that they should come out on the side of one person, one vote, and that the vote is the voice of democracy. Initially, we were met with deaf ears. Then the Georgia Chamber of Commerce just put out a statement recently saying that they were opposed to some, in quote, air quotes, elements of each one of the bills. But they still were also on balance interested in voter security as well and election integrity issues. And we know in many of these Jim Crow states with these tactics, when you say election integrity, it really means voter suppression. So that's not been good enough. So the next phase of that was we asked them, we put full page ads in the local papers, and now we've gone to the streets with the corporations. So we had We had protests over the weekend in front of the World of Coke, which is in downtown Atlanta. We had a die-in protest just today that ended a couple of hours ago, where they marched from the World of Coke downtown to the Coca-Cola World headquarters. This is beginning to up the ante, and we want to continue to press corporations. We want you all to do the same thing nationally. That's one of the other areas where we can all come together on this. We know why this is being done, and that is that the Georgia miracle did make a difference. They don't want to see it spread to other states, and that's one of the reasons why this group is so important, and why what we are doing now through the Atlanta NAACP has to be documented and recognized, and we're working to move forward with that initiative to where we can take the type of grassroots relational organizing that was so effective in Georgia to get the vote out. We can translate to other states and create a national organization that will be able to not only defeat these kinds of movements, but will be a broader movement at the polls to let people's voices be heard across the board from gerrymandering, as well as to stop voter suppression and other tactics that try to disenfranchise many of the people that care about the progressive ideals that we all share on this call. So that's the big important component here. I'll just say that it's making a difference also. We just found out today that in the Senate Bill 241, they have eliminated the ban on no excuse absentee voting, which is a major concession. We still want the whole bill gone, but it just shows you that the pressure is being amped up and they are feeling it, and we are going to continue, and we need everyone's help to do that.
Fantastic. And folks, you heard this first. I mean, this is here first. This is really spectacular. Bob Kohler, did you want to ask a question? Unmute yourself, Bob.
Yeah. I just wanted to thank Ray for everything you just said. I'm just totally blown away. And the thing that I think is really important to say is that this is democracy right here. What happens in government is not democracy. That's a game of power. The democracy is created by people who are left out of the democracy, the democratic process. You know, government plays the game that, oh, if we just put it, create nice platitudes, we've got a democracy. No, we don't until we claim it. I mean, that is definitely what's happening. It's happening in Georgia, which just, fills my heart with joy. One of the things that Republicans are dealing with is the fact, as it has been put, that they are in a death spiral. They do not represent the will, the people of America. They represent one bloating voting block called, white supremacists. And that voting block is spiraling out of, into a permanent minority. It's dry, the Republicans are tied to it.
Right.
So we have to keep going. One of the things I wanted to just mention, one of the vote suppression tactics, is to eliminate voting days, especially voting on Sunday. Many of the African American churches have a program called Souls to the Polls.
Right.
Well, I love that term. I love the idea of that. That represents democracy in the spiritual sense. And I think that is what is, that is what we are representing. It may still be, you know, look like marginal and grass, you know, but it is fomenting, it is coming forward.
Yes, so anyway, I appreciate what you're saying. You're absolutely right. These are the kinds of things that the Republicans in the state House and Senate in Georgia want to eliminate. They want to eliminate souls to the polls, Sunday voting. Why? What does that have to do with any fraud whatsoever? They want to criminalize. They want to criminalize kindness by banning your ability to provide water or food to someone that's standing in a long line. Where mostly the long lines in Georgia, they are in Black and brown communities. Why is it that you would have, why would you criminalize even the offer, not just providing, but even offering to provide water to someone who's thirsty? That is totally un-Christian, un-American. So, and again, these are supposed to be many of them evangelical Christians. Another thing that's going on.
And the long lines are created by the laws that shut down polling places.
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. So all of these points we are pressing forward on because it is clearly solutions in search of a problem on its face. And we know that it is Jim Crow. It's even beyond that. This is an existential threat against democracy. To the point that you just made, we have white supremacists who are trying to create a white republic. And the only way to do it is to restrict the vote and go to an apartheid system in America, which will cause anarchy. And we will move to authoritarianism. So what we are doing now is to save our democracy. We will not have, we came close on January 6th, as we all know, and we must save our democracy by organizing and financing, building capacity, and having direct action related to ensuring that every vote counts, and every vote counts equally. Gerrymandering ensures that votes are disproportionate, and we want to have every vote count equally. So we must expand what we did in Georgia and take this to all of the battleground states around the country, and then indeed the entire country. So part of what we want to do in these conversations going forward, and some other things that Joel is working on with a group of us, is to take what the Atlanta NAACP was able to do in galvanizing 77% counties that represented 77% of the Black vote, the relational on the ground organizing that occurred, and create a playbook for how that can be done in other states so that we are not following any party's playbook, Democratic Party or whomever. We're following a grassroots playbook that deals exactly with the issue you brought up, which is that is democracy in action, the direct action of community members coalescing together behind a common cause.
Fantastic. Absolutely.
Shout out real quick to Elsa. We've done over 50,000 phone calls. We reached 30,000 voters who made calls to their senators and state representatives. We've done over 1,400 tweets and emails. So there's been a tremendous effort that has been galvanized from what we did directly with the Atlanta NAACP and the Center for Common Ground. We're still doing the phone banking. So I'm sure Elsa can put the phone banking in the chat. The phone banking meaning this is a way for everyone from around the country to participate, where you can then call in through the phone bank to Georgia voters, and it will pull up their state senator, their state representative, and actually plug that voter in to their representative. I was on a call with some of the Black caucus from Georgia the other night, and they made it clear that this makes a difference because they will listen, the representatives will listen to their voters, people who vote for them. They won't listen to Ray McClendon if Ray McClendon calls from Atlanta, but they'll listen in Elberton, Georgia, or in Savannah, Georgia, to people who call from their own district. So that's a way that everyone can participate. So take advantage of what Elsa put in the chat.
Well, Elsa, I wanted to call on Elsa before we were recording. She told us about some of the phone banking she's doing. Elsa, can you give us the rundown again and put it in the chat, because you've got real things that people can do.
Thank you, and thank you, Ray, who has been the best.
And we're gonna, when you're done, Elsa, we're gonna go to Joel Siegel, who's gonna introduce Bert Wittes.
Great. So there are two sets of links in the chat, and Mike Hirsch has been great also posting. So our parent nonpartisan nonprofit is the Center for Common Ground. If you go there, you can sign up and you'll get all of their information. We're phone banking Georgia as well as Arizona right now, I will say. But boy, would I ever focus in on Georgia, because this is a crucial week. They've already had their crossover. They've already sent these two major bills, major omnibus bills, from the House to the Senate and the Senate to the House. This is our last chance to stop them. If you and every organization you're connected with can use that link to go to the Georgia link to do these phone banks, they're open from 9 a.m. East Coast time through 8 p.m. And literally we patched people right through. And this system lets us leave voicemail messages on answering machines. We have found that our answering machine messages in voting days are every bit as effective as actually talking to a human being. And we get through to 58% of those people with the combination of the talking to them and the voicemail. So it is incredibly effective. It is not your mother's phone banking. This has just been so effective because we're reaching out to people of color who are rarely reached out to. The two big parties do not go to people of color generally, because unfortunately, still in this country, in this day and age, except fortunately, because I hate money and campaigns, because they can't also make donations. So despite the fact that a lot of that's not true, they skip over them. 58% of the people respond and do and send this message through. We can be very effective. We just need as many callers as we can get. Please spread the message to everybody else.
Harvey, I have a quick question for Ray.
Very quick, please, because we got to move.
Yeah, it is very quick.
Same here.
Ray, I think you may have made a double negative or something like that. I wasn't sure I caught it. Did you say that they are banning no excuse voting, meaning
they are taking the ban against. They were going to reban no excuse absentee balloting. That was in the original bill.
And now
they're taking that out of the Senate.
So that means they're allowing.
It would be allowed, but you got to remember that there are still provisions, as Elsa was alluding to. There's still provisions that can be put in the bill by the other house. So the point being, we just want to vote down the bills, period, and not get into parsing different provisions. The entire bill is bad.
Okay.
I just wanted to let you know that we are making a dent in public opinion and pressure on them. That was the point in raising that.
Perfect.
Okay, so that is a victory. We're going to move ahead. I want a fantastic presentation, Ray. Please stay with us. And Elsa, thank you so much for the actual on-the-ground work you're doing. I want to mention we're joined by Tatanka Bricka from the Indigenous community. We have 74 people on the call. And I want to now go to Joel Siegel, our great jazz bass player, who is going to introduce Bert Wise. Who's been waiting patiently in what used to be our nation's capital. Go ahead, Joel, please.
Thank you, Harvey. Hello, everybody. Just want to say that what's happening in Georgia and connected to our coalition is going to be a Save Our Democracy campaign. And next Monday, 5 o'clock, everybody tune in, because the people who are organizing the campaign are going to go how you can be involved in our campaign. I never thought I'd see in my lifetime 250 voter suppression laws by 43
states.
Yeah.
Now, Joy, your audio is breaking up on us.
Oh, so can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, go ahead. But stay close to the computer, please, and let's introduce Bert.
Yeah. So now, in terms of this campaign, I called Bert Wides yesterday, this morning, to bring him in to our work. Before I go into Bert's bio, I worked with Bert for years for Congressman John Conyers. He is an absolute national treasure. He's one of, I think, this country's experts on voter suppression law. He actually wrote a lot of those laws in Congress. I'm going to read his resume in a second, but stay tuned for next Monday at 5, because all of us are going to have to be involved if we're going to beat these voter suppression laws. So Bert's resume would take probably a half an hour to read, but I'm going to read kind of the highlights that are related to us. He worked in the 60s. He worked for the Defense Department and several related think tanks. He came back to D.C. in 69, clerking for a federal judge and practicing in a Wall Street firm. Prior to re-entering private practice in 84, he was the chief counsel to Senators Philip Hart, Paul Sarbanes, and Ted Kennedy, and deputy chief counsel of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He led investigations of the CIA, Senate Select Church Committee, and subsequently was special counsel to President Carter for oversight of the entire U.S. intelligence community. He then was the chief of staff and senior counsel to then House Judiciary Committee Chairman John Conyers. That's where I did my work with Burr. He wrote the original campaign finance law, which passed the Senate in 1974. He drafted and managed the Voting Rights Act of 1970, 1975, which extended preclearance to Hispanic Asian Americans. 1982, I can go on and on and on. He staffed the House Judiciary Committee hearings on voter suppression and managed Senate passage of the Dr. King holiday law. Now that's just a teeny tiny bit, but Bert, welcome. Is there anything that you wanted to say about yourself before we go into our discussions on H.R. 1, H.R. 4, filibuster, and executive orders?
Well, because you mentioned that I've been a corporate lawyer, which is sort of like throwing me into the lions here, I should say.
We forgive you, Bert. You're forgiven.
Well, and before I went over to the light side, I worked on nuclear weapons for Secretary McNamara and the Navy's Polaris Poseidon submarine program. But Joe will remember that he and I worked with Tim Carpenter when he was beginning to really ramp up Progressive Democrats of America. And when I was chief of staff for Conyers, for his personal office where Joel was, I also was in effect the senior counsel on the Judiciary Committee on National Security and all the crap that went on under George Bush after 9/11. And I spent a good many of those years protecting Medea Benjamin from the Capitol Police. So I have some cred on the left. And on a lot of issues, I describe myself as to the left of the squad. But why don't you go ahead with your questions that you sent me, Joe?
Sure. I think left of the squad would be very accurate. So the first question I want to ask you is, given that you worked in Congress, you worked in the House and the Senate for years in the highest levels of power, what do you think are the possibilities of passing
H.R. 1?
H.R. 1 in the Senate, it passed the House There's the possibility of may have to use the filibuster on that later.
As was discussed in extensio here, and I just want to say, God bless Ray and the others, what they're doing in Georgia on the commercial side. For those of you who remember the Abscam scandal, it birthed the famous Washington phrase, money talks and BS walks. And the ability to use the public, not only to get to voters, which has been going on for a long time, but to get to big corporations who are concerned about their consumers, to get them to weigh in. There was a wonderful quote in that Big Times article that was referenced today that I loved, from the head of the Georgia Project, that these corporations had a lot of quotes in their ads from Dr. King during Black History Month. Now they need to put their money where their mouth is. And it's something in other things I do, we've been able to use that to tremendous effect in terms of the Uyghurs and the cotton industry and the importation of fabrics from cotton, most of which is grown in the Uyghur part of China. And eventually, very reluctantly, most of the major fabric and apparel wares are now taking stronger and stronger action on that. So money does talk, in addition to all the great stuff on getting to the voters. That said, you have huge mobilization that you've discussed. You've got many groups, millions of dollars lobbying, and the chances for HR 1 passing in the Senate as it is now are zero. And the reason why they're zero, apart from the Republicans not wanting anything, is it's a kitchen sink bill with everything that you and I love. Just briefly, I'm not going to go because you've been talking about it for a long time, but it has voter suppression, which we'll get to when we talk about HR 4. But apart from that, it's got a lot of stuff dealing with increasing voter access. It's got a huge hunk on campaign finance. It's got a substantial amount on redistricting, largely through requiring commissions. And then it's got stuff on what may be a neologism, a congressional ethics. So I think that without peeling some of that off separately as a whole thing, it just would sink. But just to go over again, not in any detail, to just really give you a sense of that, under just voter access, you've got internet registration, you've got correction of errors by internet, automatic registration, same day, expanding implementation of HAVA, prohibiting intimidation, misinformation, deceptive information, prohibiting improper caging as opposed to appropriate harvesting. You've got provisional ballots, early voting, same day voting, voting by mail, felony restoration, blah, 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 integrity machines, and lots of federal money to implement it. Then under campaign finance, you've got an foreign money that's to take care of what came up under Trump, to apply that which already exists, that foreign money ban, to various kinds of corporations and other organizations. You've got a model voucher program where you would get vouchers, and then you've got public financing. And just briefly, I followed that closely. That's been the big issue for John Sarbanes, as many of you know. I was Paul Sarbanes' chief of staff, so I followed John. But also in 1972, you look like you all might remember Dita Beard and the ITT scandal, which was the pre-Watergate Watergate. And while those hearings were going on, Congressman Hart asked me to draft a bill for campaign finance. And I did, and it took me 3/4 of a year. And we put it in the beginning of 73. It had full public financing, not just matching, full public financing. It got no co-sponsors. McCord wrote a letter to Sirica that blew it open. We got stampled with a lot. It was a stampede of knockoffs. But eventually it passed the Senate of the United States in 74 with full public financing. Got to the House, and it was knocked out largely by the most senior Democrats who didn't want their challengers getting money, and Labor, which didn't want its influence reduced by that. And Ted Kennedy ultimately got close, but the same group a few years later stopped it. So I've followed this with great interest. You've got that, and then you've got inauguration money. It covers, requires honest ads and disclaimers on robocalls. As we near Passover, some of you may realize how much this sounds like singing Dayenu. So it's really a kitchen sink bill. And with regard to the question that you also raised, I guess it was the next, Supreme Court challenges, there are a lot of separate constitutional issues in this. One version I've seen of it, I don't know, it also includes the whole voting suppression. HR4 is also included in this. So you've got those constitutional issues that Roberts raised in Shelby. And then you've got free speech issues with regard to campaign finance law, insofar as some of the campaign finance reforms raise issues of First Amendment free speech that gave us Citizens United. So there's, and then you've got a court which has shifted to the right. So Supreme Court's a problem. I think with regard to the filibuster, it might be worth my talking about that for a few minutes.
Go ahead.
I do want to point out before you run ahead and before I lose track, Bert, we have on the call with us Howie Hawkins, who is the presidential candidate for the Green Party. And I think it would be great if you and he could talk off camera personally about the campaign finance provisions of what this bill has and what it'll do to third parties.
Well, I can't
be very aware of it, but Howie is a real expert in it as well.
I understand. Well, obviously, there's always a tension when you're doing anything in the area of campaign finances with not wanting to stem and put too much of a hurdle in front of third parties. On the other hand, we didn't want to fund anyone in the country who says, I want to run for president. So what we had is something that they have in this bill, which is a screening mechanism. I'm not saying it's ideal or it would please Howie, but it was the best we could come up with. And I would say that this bill I circulated to many of the top political scientists across a broad ideological spectrum and constitutional scholars. And despite the Supreme Court in Buckley v. Valeo knocking down several parts, they all, including Phil Kurland, who was a very conservative constitutional scholar at the University of Chicago, said every jot and tittle was constitutional, although it might have been in the afterglow of Watergate. But with regard to minority parties, essentially we said, and I, right now my life depended, I couldn't tell you exactly the numbers, that you had to get a certain number of voters to raise with small, very small donations, enough money to be treated as a serious candidate. And that basic concept is carried forward in Sarbanes-Bill. But be happy to talk off campus.
Hey, Bert.
With regard to the filibuster, can I talk with regard to the filibuster? So you know that when the Senate was blocking Obama's judges, Reid went along with abolishing it. And then with McConnell, stepped up the game when Garland was up and included the Supreme Court. What some of you may not, and you know that the procedure that they use, which is a complicated procedure, is now known as the nuclear option. What many of you may not know is that in 1974, I and Bob Barnett, the book agent to the Stars who gets millions of dollars for the Obamas and the Clintons for their biographies, abolished the filibuster altogether. I wrote the script for Mansfield, Javits, Rockefeller, who was sitting in the chair as vice president, Mondale. And when it was finished, there was no filibuster. Actually, the filibuster in those days was 67, two-thirds of all the senators. And it was not just two-thirds of those voting. And for about 5 or 6 hours, like Camelot, there once was Camelot, there was no filibuster on anything. And then the Southerners and Republicans and some of the old Southerners came over and said, we'll blow the place up if you don't compromise. And as the Democrats always did on Vietnam and everything else, they eventually agreed to move back not to 67, but to 60. And rules changes, including changing Rule 22, is not 60, it's 67. It's still 67. So that's just the history. But in terms of now, I think you're beginning to see in the media that the way to get around, if you can move her totally, how do you pronounce the Arizona lady?
Cinema, like going to the movie.
Yeah, cinema, okay. Names go, the rest. West Virginia.
Oh, Manchin.
A Manchin. If you get him to go whole hog, fine, unlikely. But to target, and you're beginning to see now references to, at least as to this bill, the Democrats will eventually, they'll try, I assume, a few times to make it clear the Republicans are blocking a lot of good stuff, starting with the stuff we're talking about today. And then a targeted filibuster doesn't have to be on everything, using the nuclear option on, I would say, most likely the voting one, voter suppression, because there's so much on that, as you've talked about at length, so much going on. So I think that would happen. And then whether they would then try, assuming it's successful, to do it on the other part of S1, the campaign finance, although I think that might, the Republicans might go to the doormat on that, to the mattresses. But I think they might do it on another big issue, maybe that one. And so I think they'll do it piecemeal. If they did it enough times that people started saying, why do we have this thing? Then maybe they'd get rid of it. I don't see them getting rid of the filibuster in order to get this bill, but a targeted one may.
Hey, Bert.
That's my answer to your first three questions.
Yeah, let me ask you.
So now you're on, why is it important to four, or do you want to go back?
I want to ask you a quick question about the filibuster, if that's okay, Joel.
Sure.
Oh, sure.
Is it possible, how many votes would it take in the Senate to whittle down the filibuster on voting rights? In other words, would it be possible for the Democrats to say in the rules that you cannot filibuster a bill that has to do with voting rights, forgetting about the rest of the filibuster?
Yeah, no, that's what I, when I said a targeted filibuster, that's the concept. And conceivably you could include, all I think that would be too much, voter enhancement, that is automatic registration of voters and anything that goes beyond the voter suppression tactics that you're most outraged by and that the New York Times article today is about. All the different tricks that they play to hold down the vote of likely Democratic voters, college students or young people, now just turned 18 and on up, minorities and the elderly.